Hello, everyone. Great to be here. Good news is I completed the program. I have the master's. So it's wonderful to be here, and I am going to talk about parent and teen communication. And is this timed by chance, or am I stepping on something? Okay. Sorry about that. I think I'm going in the wrong. And so I will be discussing parent and teen communication and the impact on adolescent sexual behavior. And this is about a program called Plain Talk. So it's one of the projects that I'm fortunate to be working on that does work with adolescent youth, both males and females. So I really love this program and being able to work with it. And I have no disclosures to disclose. Nothing, no relationships to disclose. So my objectives today are to describe factors involved with the parental and teen sexual and reproductive health communication, examine the impact of relationship satisfaction and parents' comfort in discussing sexual issues, and also assessing the impact of parental cooperative or mutual communication on teen sexual behavior. And just a little background, Plain Talk Philadelphia is a 5-year study funded by the Family and Youth Services Bureau and Administration on Children and Youth Families. It is a PREAS grant, so it's a teen pregnancy prevention program. It's a community-level intervention implemented in public housing communities in Philadelphia, and it aims to reduce teen pregnancy and HIV STI rates, increase sexual health knowledge among teens and adults, and promote positive sexual health communication within families, and also kind of the larger context, social context of trying to get greater access and increase to sexual health methods, protection, knowledge to teens. And just real quick, Plain Talk, the intervention itself, the unique part of Plain Talk, which is really wonderful, is the intervention targets both teens and parents. So it kind of tries to go at preventing pregnancy and increasing sexual health with teens by dealing with the teen and the adult. And they do this through a couple different ways. They have educational sessions, peer support, and social media. So the teen component really is trying to teach teens, males and females, about sexual health, sexual knowledge, what are their choices, and with the hope of that will lead them into becoming a youth activist and kind of improving their network of sorts. And for the adults, what they really want to do is increase their comfort and also their knowledge about talking to teens and having them become askable adults. So askable adults are for the parents as well as any adult in the community who a teen can go to and talk about what their choices are. And just real briefly, data collection, we recruited our families through door-to-door screening and flyering in our 4 public housing communities in North Philadelphia. Interviewers screened approximately 80% of the households in those 4 communities. So overall, they knocked on about 1,100 doors, and we were able to talk to the majority of the families. For the youth, we administered our baseline interviews using a COSI. That was so we could collect very reliable sexual behavior measures and kind of decrease any stigma that the teens might feel about reporting that behavior. For the parents, however, we decided to use a trained interviewer to minimize burden for a couple of reasons. One is we were worried about adults and their computer literacy, and 2, parents were asked about multiple teens that they were responsible for, and we just thought having them talk from about one to four teens was just a little too much to do on a computer by themselves. Teens and parents were compensated $25, and we did our interviews between June 2011 and November 2011. And the eligibility really was just that they had to live in one of the 4 public housing communities that we selected. They had to be a primary parent or caregiver of a teenager between 12 and 18, and or be a teen between 12 and 18. And like I said, the parents were asked about multiple children in the household that they were responsible for. So parents, we also didn't restrict the number of teens that that could also participate. For the rest of my presentation, I'm actually going to be using the word parent, but I really do mean caregiver as well. So it's just a little easier to kind of talk about a parent. But we did have, and the majority of our, the kind of dyads I'll be talking about were parents. However, we had some step-parents, we had grandparents, we had siblings, we had aunts and uncles. As long as the teen was living in the household and that person was their primary caregiver, they were asked questions about them. So, but I'll be using parent just for ease. And the focus will be on baseline data that we collected. We matched about 153 parent and teen dyads, and about 35% of the parents actually gave us information on more than one teen. So that's going to be the focus of today's presentation. We have a wealth of data that we can look at with Plain Talk, and so this is just kind of the beginning. So it's really exciting about all the information people share with us. Okay, so who did we have? So parents, the majority were female, 92%. They were about 40 years old. About 1 in 3 parents had less than a high school education, 54% a high school degree or a GED, and the majority of the people identified, 95%, as Black and African American. And the teens, a little half and half for female and male. Our teens were 56% female, 44% male. They had to be between 12 and 18, as I stated previously, with a mean age of 14. We did not assess just yet whether or not they're on track school-wise. So at this point, this is just where they are when we interviewed them. So 53% were not even in high school yet, which I think is an interesting finding when we start looking at what their behavior is and maybe how early we want to start having programs in schools start talking to kids, at least within Philadelphia. 24% were just beginning in high school, and about 24% were in the later part of high school. So do parents and teens talk about sex and birth control? Well, it depends on who you ask. Reported, this is what we have. So the light color bars are our parents' report, and the purple-ish kind of bars are our teens. And 91% of parents said that they talked to their teen that we interviewed about sex. 82% talked about birth control with them. But when we ask teens whether or not that particular parent or caregiver, is talking about sex or birth control, only 68% of teens said their parents did. 55% said they did about birth control. So we have some differences about what's going on, about what people think they're doing and what people think they're hearing. So I pardon the lopsidedness of this slide. So did parents and teens agree? So if we look at the kind of that second row, the 64% and the 49%, the good news is that over half of our dyads, our parent and teen dyads, did agree in whether or not they talked about sex. So 64% of our parents and teens said, yes, we talked about sex. They both reported that. And then 49% said they both talked about birth control. And kind of curious, so talking about sex, not really talking about birth control, so we're not quite sure what's happening there. So are parents just saying, don't do it? Or are they giving them all the information that they need? So as we talk about sex, we're also going to talk about ways that you can prevent pregnancy and HIV and STIs. So we think there might be something going on there that we could tap into. And then if you go all the way over to the right, I think this is a really important gap that we can address, is that 26% of our dyads said, no, we're not talking about sex, and we're not talking about birth control. So we have about 1 in 4 of our families are not even talking about sex with their teenagers. So why is this a problem? Well, because they're having sex. So our teens, what we did is, and this is kind of, we really are very fortunate in the information that our youth shared with us. So right now, I'm focusing on eversex, which means oral, vaginal, or anal sex. But we do have a lot of information that hopefully next year, at next APHA, I'll be able to present on more recent sex, past 3 months, number of partners, and protection. But right now, we're going to focus on eversex. So 58% of our youth, 12 to 18-year-olds, reported ever having sex in their lifetime, at least once. 33% reported oral sex, 54% vaginal sex, and 13% reported anal sex. So they are sexually active. And then when we look at differences by the gender of the teens, male teens were more likely to report ever having sex compared to our female teens. But we still, 78% of the males, but 41% of our females are having sex. And then just as, And as we kind of expect, as adolescents are aging, as they get older, they're more likely to also report that they've ever had sex. So we kind of expected the bars to be like that. However, 37% of our 12 to 13-year-olds and 50% of our 14 to 15-year-olds are reporting sex. So, but are the programs in Philadelphia, are the sex ed programs in Philadelphia addressing teens that young? So that's something, that we might want to start thinking about. I know Philadelphia does require, like in high school, at least a certain, like a semester of sexual health, but what's happening in the grade school? And self-report, so did parents know what their teens were doing? Well, 58% of the parents said, I think my teen is not having sex. 39% thought they were, and 3% just didn't know. So did that match what the teen said? Well, the good news is 78% did match. So whether the teen was sexually active or not, the parents and the teens were right on par. So parents knew what the teens were doing. But 22% were not matched at all. And when we look at this by whether or not the teen is sexually active, the concern is really the kind of the green bars. So the green bars are sexually active teens. And if we look at that, 1 in 3 parents said, my teen is not sexually active, but they were. So that's about 33% had reported something different than what the teen reported. So I think that's also a gap that we would like to also address in plain talk, is to really start opening up these communications so parents are aware of what their teens are doing. And even still, about 6% of our teens who reported not being sexually active, their parents actually thought they were sexually active. So it's not always that the parents think they're having sex and or think they're not having sex and they are. It can go the other way around too. So parental beliefs. We have this information. We know that our teens are sexually active. Parents and teens are not really agreeing on whether or not they're talking. Parents don't always know what their teens are doing. So what does that matter? And so we looked at using a couple different scales of comfort level with sexual health, whether or not parents and teens had this open mutual communication with each other, and what impact does the relationship, the satisfaction of the relationship matter in all this discussion. So these are just some, reliabilities and some samples of the items that we used. Our comfort level, we asked parents, how comfortable are you discussing issues related to sex, birth control, HIV, pregnancy. Cooperative communication was, my child would not take my advice about sex and birth control. My child would be honest with me about sex and birth control. My child would think I don't trust him or her if I talk to them about sex or birth control. So all these scales with our sample of parent and teen dyads had very good reliability. And then relationship satisfaction, just kind of overall, how do they feel like they communicate with one another? How are they resolving conflict? What is the, what kind of relationships do they have? And if we look at this, pretty much overall, parents really did believe that they had good communication with their teens. That it could go up to 4, except for comfort level actually would go up to 3, was the maximum number that they could have. So overall, the parents really did feel that they're having good communication with the teens, they're very satisfied in the relationship with their teen, and they're very comfortable talking about sexual health with any type of teen. The comfort level one was a little different because that wasn't specific to their teen. But overall, we still think it's important. So what does that mean? So here's this ugly logistic regression slide that we put up here. And so when we included female gender of the teen and the age of the teen, and then we also included cooperative communication, comfort level talking about sex, and how satisfied they are, what we find here is that controlling for all those other factors, the cooperative communication that parents felt they had with their teens impacted on whether or not teens were sexually active. So I think that's really important because what this is showing is that the less parents feel good about the communication they have with their teens, the more likely the teen is going to be sexually active. And even when thinking about how satisfied they are within their relationship. So we did think, well, maybe just parents who are really comfortable talking about sex or really happy with their teens are the ones this impacts. But even controlling for them, how you're talking about sex to your teen matters on whether or not that teen had sex. That's just kind of repeating what I just said. And so in concluding, discussions about sex and birth control between parents and teen need to increase or improve because a good proportion of our teen parent dyads did not agree on what the talk was. And also parental cooperative communication beliefs do impact and predict whether or not a teen is sexually active. And improving parent and teen relationships might be a way that we can also influence the sexual decision making of our teens. Some limitations, it is a small sample size. Our dyads are 153. It was a targeted sample, so it was in four public housing communities in Philadelphia. It's self-report data, so we're going on what the parents are telling us and what the teens are telling us, so there might be some inaccuracies there. And it is baseline data, so we can't kind of determine any causal relationships. And some of our future work, however, what we're really interested in looking at is examining more attitudes and experiences over time. We are doing this. It's a five-year study, so we will be having longitudinal data to be able to discuss. I also am interested in exploring more about the teens' beliefs and attitudes about their relationships with parents. So this has been a little one-sided, kind of what do the parents feel and think, and I'm very interested in getting into what the teens actually think and feel about their relationship with their parents or caregivers. And we want to assess a few more family patterns on more recent sexual risk behavior, so number of partners, how much unprotected sex is happening. And then overall, we do want to analyze the impact that Plain Talk Philadelphia is having on the families that it's reaching. And this is just some acknowledgement of the great people I work with at PHMC and Plain Talk Philadelphia. Thank you very much.